more people. So we shall abstain a second. This is Howard and Sonny coming through the door. How's that for channeling?
Hi, guys.
And at break, you can all exchange names. And here comes Jill. Come on in, Jill. Come on down. Wouldn't that be something? Michael, come on down. And they just descend into the room.
He already is.
So then we'd have dissension, yes. You know. Before ascension. They come, they're driving Uber now, you see.
Uninsured.
Yes. Yeah, uninsured, exactly. Or perfect assurance, one of the two, you know. Okay. So, well, we could start off by giving you an update or, you know, talking about, or just answering your questions. But first of all, it's grand to have all of you here. And on behalf of we who speak through the self-deprecator, it was nice of you to all orchestrate this. So on his behalf, we thank you. So just turn it over to you. What's on your mind? What do you want to chat about, get info about, or just, you know, go from there? We'll leave it to you guys. Guide us. We're at your service.
What's the fastest way to overturn an administration?
Assassination.
That's what you're going to say.
It is. That's the factual answer. We're not recommending that. It has a lot of, obviously, unintended consequences, as they say. But right now, this one is doing a fairly good job of having a very interesting effect. First of all, it's doing its own levels of imploding on itself, but those parts that aren't imploding are actually kind of regularizing. Now, to the degree to which that seems odd, nonetheless, it will, you know, help stabilize some of the scenes in the world. On the outer fronts, though, it has done a fairly significant job on galvanizing people into both camps, you know. And since this has been, you know, the Great Divergence was really a setback for the mature soul era evolution in a smooth way, this jarring backward into more polarized young and baby soul orientation has had the effect of, at least to some positive degrees, causing people of older soul age orientations to kind of, you know, wake up. There's been a great malaise, one of the beneficial things that it has done is, you know, if we talk about sociologically defined generations, starting with the baby boomer generation, which is now essentially the oldest here, or the lost generation, the one that they that came essentially at the late depression and during the war, they and the baby boomers are now, of course, the power block as far as income is concerned. But they are not. They're now out of the power block, or just at the tail end of the power block, moving to the quote Generation X, you know, taking the leads and so forth. Gen X has basically, you know, been quiet. A lot of what you see in both the conservative and democratic sides on the younger sides are relatively follower type folks, insofar as that they fall in line. What we're looking to see, and what has been really happening, is that has been in the younger generations. That polarization has actually started stirring things. So call them Generation Y, and the oldest of the so-called millennials, which started about 1992. And in that, it's also been a very creative time. Even though the administrative state, welcome Analu, has been, you know, is being attacked and you know, as it's being called through this administration and so forth. Nonetheless, the positive side of it has been that it has cut loose a lot of energy for, you know, individuals to say, okay, so how do we reinvent institutions? Primarily because communication technology is available and out there. And of course, like any technology, you know, one could say it's not the technology, it's how you use it. There's good strides, but as far as this one falling on its face, it's not. It's not until the next election, and then you will start to see the erosion. The number of people who who really had the abrasive, entrenched energy, you know, who put Mr. Trump in office essentially, but also, you know, that are facing the fears of a world that seems to be shrinking underneath them. They are starting to lose the faith. You know, they had the emotional flash in the pan, and it's already starting to erode. So by 2018, actually a fair amount of his power, even within some of the ranks of the Republican Party, which you already see, interestingly enough, will start to, the dominoes will start to fall away from supporting him. And there will be other movements that will rise out of that. But so, from a sheer sarcastic but honest, realistic, that is the quickest way. We don't see that happening, by the way.
Do you see impeachment?
Not this year. No, okay. No. That's when. Yes.
So what happens with the Russian connection? It just falls apart.
The Russian connection will actually be pretty much established, and until Mitch McConnell is gifted the heart attack, which he's slated to have at the beginning of next year, it'll be stonewalled. Mm. Mm.
And so, also, what about? And this greatly disturbs me. It seems like the conservative elements have been in ascendancy for quite a while.
Right.
And it seems like the progressive elements have been on the losing end of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is that ever going to change in my lifetime?
There'll be more of a reorientation and redefinition. When the Gen Ys and the Millennials, as we were talking about, come to, they won't be walking along the lines of what you'd consider progressives and conservatives much anymore. They'll probably divide up along lines of traditionalists and inventors. And the traditionalists will be a small but wealthy minority. In other words, you know, like for instance, all Trump's children and, you know, all the 1%'s children, even if they're in that millennial group, are very much vested in that kind of mindset. Well, the rest of the world isn't. Hi, Edie. Hi, Kate. Come on in. Let's see. We've got two right up here just waiting for you. And my goodness, this is like the closest thing to a full house in God knows how long.
10 years.
What? See, we must have had a few parallels collapse or merge or something, you know, including these two who I haven't seen in years, and they actually came up from the Bay Area. My goodness, you know. So, the fact that you're here is great. It is. It's terrific to see you. You look great. And go Dubs.
Exactly.
So, yes, Tom.
North Korea.
Let me finish addressing Angela, and then I'll get to that. So, anyway, Angela, as that division starts, and these aggregate groups begin to reform, it's going to be some very interesting hybrids. You know, the kibbutz system in Israel, you'll actually see a lot of reorganization in American agriculture as the millennials go at corporate America with a fury in the courts and start, winning, if you will, battles to decentralize food production. At the same time, what you will see, which many will consider unfortunate and frightening, is you're going to see more privatization of things like police forces, so that, you know, the security state will also be on the rise. And that's the traditionalist group, small as they may be, they'll still wield a lot of, you know, money influence. So the mindset of, you know, what you consider progressives, the idealists, will make its way back around, and it will be much more pragmatic, and it'll have to be because of the way that resource degradation is going to happen. Scientists will be, will have won the day as far as information. However, how to implement it will be kind of a logjam. And, you know, politics will be kind of like, okay, what works? All right, if we've got to desalinate, build the plants. If we've got to repopulate forests, you know, okay, maybe we do it just with monoculture trees that grow really fast because we got a carbon fix and so on. Rather than do the more idealized Sierra Club model of the 60s and 70s, which would either first obviously seek to preserve wildlands in their virgin states if they could, but if they, any kind of restoration would have to be like ecologically balanced. Well, they're not going to follow that strictly. They won't be, you know, they'll look again to the pragmatic view and to say, okay, carbon fixing is what's needed, habitat for the remaining animals. We can't get a real diverse forest anytime quickly, so we got to get a forest grown that'll go, things of that nature. So there will be resurgences, but it'll be reorganized. And again, there will be more elements in the mature soul orientation, as also there will be more extreme elements of the negative soul, young soul orientation. Again, we've mentioned the security state just a moment ago.
Just one little question, and everybody may know this, but I haven't been around for a while. Can you tell me what the role in Soul Age of Trump is?
Donald Trump is a six-level old king. Six-level young king, pardon me. He's in dominance. No, definitely we misspoke. We realized that the portable defibrillator is in the next room. You can all line up to get to restart your hearts. CPR, right. The king nurse here just is going, oh my God, I'm going to have to administer to everyone. Yeah, you could. You absolutely, you know, but no, you. We won't be handing out the nitroglycerin or digitalis just yet. You know, so no. So six level young king dominance, aggression, moving centered, pragmatist. What we hear out of his mouth, sounding, you know, roughly equivalent to a fifth grade bully on the playground who has ADD and it was raised basically in the Bowery, is about what the negative poles of those overleaves would produce. So, yeah.
With a cell phone.
With a worse, with a Twitter account. Yeah.
Cell phone and Twitter.
Exactly, those two things.
What about his life led him there instead of to the positive poles?
Well, first of all, when he came into this life, he was looking for, wealth. So he got himself a negative pole baby warrior and an early young, hyper-arrogant king mother. They share the hair. If you've ever seen pictures, it's amazing to see the literal hairstyling and so forth. Her hair went to his head, not father to son. His father was ruthless, not just in business, but as you've probably all read, you know, he's an avowed Klansman, Klan supporter. He was also a Nazi supporter, one of the secret donors to overseas, absolutely hated his eldest son. And Donald got to witness this and got the imprinting, you know, unless you're perfect and unless you're ruthless, you're not shit. And so he took that and he saw a mother that, by the way, in her younger days looked just very much like Melania. As far as the kind of elegance and air, and not to mention, you know, coming from a poor European country, right, as an illegal emigre, no less. And in any case, the he seeing that plus having those overleaves, and it's interesting because you know so many of the karmas that he was here to both initiate and work on, you know, were all lined up. It was this time in his set of experiences, his lifetime rollout was already set up. So taking dominance, and aggression and moving center, it just made him into an animal. But what dropped him in the negative poles was all the hatred around which, and then also the privilege and getting the reinforcement that privilege, you know, meaning money, can get you anything you want, and more importantly, it can get you out of anything you do. And so he is, he finds himself in what we've termed as a dark, joyous state.
Exemplary.
He revels in the mania of his narcissism. As an individual soul, you might say that as far as he's concerned, he's having a great life.
Right.
And as far as the impact on the world, he wasn't supposed to win this election, but when the divergence hit, and obviously he had already won the Republican thing, and all the factors, the Russian connection, the number of people that stayed away from the polls, all the dominoes, Dow just rearranged and said, okay, well, if these people want to evolve, we're going to give them an extra shove. And so that's what it's done. So did that answer your question, Kathy, to some extent? Okay, sure. Okay, Thomas, North Korea.
So this situation with North Korea and just the whole tone of the administration, the aggression, the posturing, where's that all going?
What is his name? Kim Jong-un. He's a first level, baby server. And really not as sophisticated as Trump, but just as, psychopathic. The two of them are just loving this dynamic. Neither of them are going to initiate anything, but they are getting such good press out of it. And then, good press meaning, not good in the sense of, oh boy, isn't it great that Donnie's doing all this thing, but it generates so much energy. And one of the things about dark joy is fanned not by love and light, it's just fanned by electrical energy. And the friction that's being caused in this circumstance is a great electrical energy source for both of them. Plus, the other thing it's done, of course, and really the major thing on the domestic front is it completely blots out over the news all the investigations that are going on into all the Russian connections that his advisors, administrators, his business interests, and everything are involved with. By the way, that is one of his unconscious tactical brilliances. The minute something starts to get him some negative press, he just jumps to something else, just yells really loud. Everybody just goes, huh? And then stops paying attention. And since you already live in a world where the rate of information exchange has become virtual light speed, and not just because of the internet, but because of all the various kinds of media, and how much, by the way, your cell phones have rewired your brains. Any of you who ever get online and start flipping, it's because your brain is getting the automatic reinforcement to change stimulus at a higher and higher, more rapid pace. I mean, we're talking about literally your neurology is being amplified. So it doesn't mean you're doing the thing that what made civilization great, which is deep contemplation. And deep contemplation requires time, meaning that when one sits and reads something or listens to a story, that there's cogitation. And cogitation means pulling out of the rapidity of essentially moving-centered information delivery and going into the higher intellectual center and being as still with it. Because, one of the things about intuition, folks, and the higher intellectual center is that even if you weren't educated, you would all still get downloads that there was something fishy about, no matter how well orchestrated an argument or how supposedly alt fact or even real facted something was. There is a natural, you know, system that every animal has, not just human animals, but every animal. Matter of fact, what's ironic is that in the information / technological, you know, cyborg age, many of humanity have lost connection with that animal instinctive sense of truth finding. And so anyway, without that time to digest, it just keeps going over. And then you have the syndrome you all know as information overwhelm. So, you answer your question, Tom?
Yes, thank
okay,
you.
Good. Yes, Cameron.
I want to ask a question about North Korea.
Okay.
And the people of North Korea.
Okay.
Because there's been some talk recently through some of my friends that it's a very hopeless place to live.
Mm-hmm.
The people are very oppressed. Nature is following in that suit. And,
You mean this is a general state of their sociology, you mean, kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay, so North Korea is a predominantly second through sixth level baby country. You know, even all the media orchestrations you ever see of them, where the population is, you know, cheering wildly about the, you know, the great leader. You know, when they zoom in on the faces, what you see are basically these moonbeam empty eyes that are terrified, because without their participation, they could be hauled off and shot. And in addition to that, you have a countryside that has been over the three Kims, you know, with this one being the third in power, have largely, you know, decimated their forests. Population has stayed relatively the same, but it's relatively the same because of starvation, and the way that, you know, then the way that most of their resources, including, you know, their mining interests, have taken out a lot of their either precious metals or their rare earths, as they call them, shipped them off to China. But China has in turn, given them coal. But their food production is very low. So as far as, yes, the hopelessness, it's not a very big country. You know, it's maybe, I think the population is right around 100 million, 80 million, something like that. But the degree to which they represent, what's a good analogy? Imagine one of those old devices called an autoclave, which is a pressurized device, or just call it a pressure cooker. And the heat keeps rising, but there's no place for the pressure to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And it explodes eventually. But first, it will tend to actually cave in the walls of the pressure cooker itself. It'll implode, you know, it'll start to implode before the pressure then sends it out. And that's essentially the metaphor for that country. What's really interesting is that it has actually compelled China to be one of the more balanced countries on the planet right now. I know, doesn't that sound like an odd thing to say? I mean, they actually have a relatively stable and conscientious administration, even though they are still, largely a somewhat dictatorial state. But they have a lot of environmental policies that are really, trying to put in place. They're trying to, take care of their 1.6 billion inhabitants. So it's really ironic. But they entered into the Young Seoul era, just after Mao, and breaking the history of the thousands of years of baby soul orientation of high top down. Whenever you see a country in history or even now that holds a leader as a god, all you have to do say the word is baby soul. That's what baby souls do. Now young souls, they don't say the young soul's god. They'll just say that the leader is the boss. Supreme. But generally, then, it's not even one person. It's, a Politburo, to use the term from Russia, right? The Chinese have something similar in that terminology, but In any case, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, and these are all the kind of polarities that have to happen, because for baby soul countries to actually break out of their log jams, they have to go through complete collapses. Now, it's unfortunate, because when they do that, of course, especially in this era when resources are at their, you know, at a mass of, or I should say at a shortage level, where it's about to, you know, hit critical mass, that means the explosiveness can be, you know, very big, and will be. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, Charlie.
It's something about, possibly about the economic developments between now and, say, the election.
You mean like what's going to happen in this economy?
Yeah, just sort of where it's going,
okay.
What the ups and downs look like and influences.
Okay, so several things on that. Depending upon what, you know, social class and race you are, is going to be almost entirely dependent upon, or and existing educational level. So, first of all, social class. Or income class. Let's be really clear about that. Income class. The poor are just going to get poorer and poorer, and already are just dropping like flies. And not just in this country. I mean, the whole refugee issue is indicative of a larger world issue, where the, you know, so few have concentrated power over so much that there's really, it's not shortages of anything. It's withholding by those who own it. And so the effect is, because social justice has become so polarized, that they will continue to kind of fall off the edge. Now, in the middle, those who can participate in the banking systems and the credit systems, and who are of the white race, you notice that, you know, most of you folks here are of the, you know, lily white variety. Now, whether you all are, you know, whether all you all are egalitarians or racists, really doesn't even matter. You're getting the benefit of the spillover, as it were. So as long as you can participate in those systems to whatever degree, including Social Security, which will be stable easily for the foreseeable future, and a system, even if the Republicans were, and we don't think they're ever going to be, or at least not in the, not in this fellow's term, able to privatize Social Security, it's going to be, even if they did it, it would still put in a system that essentially would be a rollover of what it is now. Just somebody making a profit off of it, you know, administering it, that's all. But anyway, so this middle group that you're all in, many are actually making beneficial gains right now in a few areas. And the first one is anybody who is in any kind of the stock market or invested in any kind of companies where, you know, there is that very variable mythical paper value. You know, you've seen, you know, since Trump got in, there's been that magic stock market bounce. Economic activity hasn't gone up at all, but, you know, it has revealed the pretend of the great system, you know, that it's all, what do you think? Well, we'll just jack it up, and because we think it should be, and so on. And that's, by the way, within the next 100 years, that will be the massive evolutionary breakdown that will happen, is that monetary systems will finally be outed for what they are. And that is grand illusions that started off being relatively balanced against real goods and services and resources, and now exist in a plane where powerful people just say it's worth more and add zeros on and so forth. But only a few people, those people approximately the top 30-40%, can gain any benefit from those added on zeros. The 60% below lose, because, you know, they don't have the purchasing power, they won't get their minimum wages, and on and on and on. So so for the next 2 years, or at least for the rest of this year, you know, the stock market will continue to rise. There will be all these talks of of new products, particularly you know useless ones that are just basically improvements on what's already existing there, but they'll have more bells and whistles, better advertising behind them, and you know you'll see their prices. I mean, look at the price of the cell phones. Even those of you who liked the smartphones, you know, 5 years ago, you know, they were okay, $300, $400. Now they're twice that much, and they're really not all that much different. But they can, again, add the zeros, right? So, in any case, that group of people will continue to advance. California, for all of its grumblings about, you know, Mr. Trump and all that kind of thing, for the most part, you know, your real estate markets here are doing very well. Because of the good winter, even with people griping about, you know, it's too wet and it's too cold and on, you know, has basically restored this place to the green golden, you know, pot of gold that it has always been, both agriculturally and in terms of recreationally. So it will continue in those echelons to be very good, where you're going to see and continue to not hear about it, except in mostly foreign newspapers, is that much of middle America, including you know family farms, what small manufacturing there is, in spite of all the hoopla and his promises and so forth, are going to continue to decline. And to a great extent, it won't even be because they'll be shipping jobs overseas. It'll be because there'll be machines making machines. And that was an inevitable track even before Mr. Trump came in. So does that help, Charlie?
Yeah.
Yeah. About the next prior to the next election, approximately the primaries in June, around that, there'll be an economic slump. And you'll see a lot of unrest. The interesting part about it is actually there's going to be a boom of food available because of the wet weather in the West. So it'll be this real interesting thing where finally food prices will actually level off. And
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You don't need to call us God. We're not that close. I mean, not at the. Is that you, Thomas?
No.
No? Okay. Well, we've got quite a song going here. Can we all sing along? No, it wasn't, Darren. It wasn't you at all. So shall we take just a 30-second or everyone pull out your respective devices and turn off the musical portion, if you will.
What about Elizabeth Warren?
What about Elizabeth Warren?
Her role as a galvanizing force within the nation and among women?
Well, let's see what we got here.
It was me.
It was you?
We all knew it.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
And you don't need to call us God either.
I didn't.
I know. All right. Let's see what we get about Elizabeth Warren. Okay. Elizabeth Warren is trying to blow up the Democratic Party. Yeah, it's necessary. As long as the Democrats continue to bow down to the neoliberal Wall Street and boy, it's talking again. No, it wasn't you, dear. You're forgiven. in any case, as long as they do that and continue to center their party orientation around that, it's going to be they're going to continue to be ineffectual. Elizabeth Warren is really clear. That's one thing about her. She is, you know, she is just really, really tough. Even with the new head of the Democratic Party right now, they're still kind of just self-flagellating, you know. By the next round of elections, she's going to threaten them that she'll divide the party, and there'll be enough people in this country, including those with money who want new leadership, that will say, we'll do it. The Republicans said that'll be a good thing for them, and yet people are ready to lynch Republicans. You know, their own constituents are ready to lynch them. So it's the disaffection of apathy through fear that is really what's at issue here. Is so many people are saying, oh, screw this, I'm just bowing out, I'm not going to, that's the problem. You know, they don't realize that the old soul document called the Constitution was intended to be flexible, and it still is. But it's how you utilize it. And people have to participate. And, that level, that's where the interesting fight's going to be. We think, again, that the millennials will really be prominent next time. They also got slapped in the face, especially a lot of the young people who thought, who were very cynical this last year. And when suddenly they woke up and, wow, my gay friends may be imprisoned after they had just won the Supreme Court's, rights across the board. Wow, you mean because we didn't show up to vote? Oh my God, let me text about it. There's that level of reality check that is starting to sink in. The problem is, and this is where the baby boomers actually have to own a lot of the responsibility. Many of you came out of, being children of the greatest generation. And, felt really hurt and bothered, and, you had to do a lot, especially you old souls who came into these bodies and felt like, you had to deal with the historic karmas, so the childhoods felt like they were lousy and you didn't get the right upbringing or whatever the thing way. And then, of course, in the 70s, well, in the 60s, you all went out and protested, and in the 70s, you all went into therapy. and in the 80s, then, you all came basically to the Human Potential Movement or the New Age, right? And that began the divergence of, we need to change, is to, I'm going to do this all for me. And the big payoff is as long as I tell myself it's all about me, somehow the external ramifications of that is it'll help everybody else. Well, not quite. If it's all about me, it's all about you. It's not all about the collective. So you modeled that to the children. And so a lot of children, regardless of economic class or group or whatever income class, got the message that mom and dad aren't gonna let me get oppressed by the teacher like they were, and if any kind of behavioral problems, they're not gonna spank me, they're just gonna give me some drugs. And so seriously, they got a lot of imprinting that basically gave them passes on a lot of the kind of hardships that you all did live through. And you actually, for the most part, it's what gave you the range. To use Abraham's term, it gave you the contrast. And for you old souls that actually made something of yourselves, you have that awareness now. It doesn't mean it was pleasant. It doesn't mean it was easy. But in fact, it actually made you the more whole beings. So in that younger group then, especially these Gen Ys, the one, not quite the millennials, but we're talking about people between 30 and 40 right now, they've essentially been approved of that everybody's worth a star. And everyone else should look out for you because they need to be courteous to you. That's the way it should be, instead of, what about you to them? That kind of mindset. So, people don't use blinkers. Interesting enough, Charlie and I were just talking about that today. At driving, in lines, nobody strikes up conversations anymore, at least not in that age group too often. The heads are down. And that sort of thing. And this is not to say that they're bad people, but rather that the imprint has been such that it is, that it is made for a social strata in this country that is detached. So, yeah.
I have two questions.
Go ahead.
The first one is, my two roommates are at home trying to trap a foot-long gecko. So we don't know where he came from, and I like to think that he's going to be found before I get home.
Found?
Is there an implication there of some phobia, perhaps, Kristen?
It put long, doesn't belong there, and I'm going to go home and know he isn't there.
And you're sure it's actually a gecko and not a lizard?
That's what my Chinese roommate said.
Iguana.
Iguana. Scared the hell out of them, and they're trying to get him. So.
Huh.
Get the gecko.
Well, it's very interesting because it would indicate the appearance of that animal as a spirit energy. By the way, the answer is no. They're not going to find him. You're going to have him around. He's going to visit for a few days. These are animals that they will find a way not only under your couch, but they'll just bore into like the underlining in there and just kind of like hang out and come out because your house has enough external points where things like spiders and flies can come in, and they'll just kind of hang out and just going, oh my god, this is like a smorgasbord. But it'll be one of those moments where he's just pigging out on something in the middle of the floor, and one of you will go and throw something over it before but we also get it's not an iguana and it's not a gecko. It's probably actually one of the local blue-belly lizards here, but it's a big one.
Yeah.
It's a big one. So the spirit, the
so
spirit.
Here you go.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Do you have a cat?
Exactly.
You want to borrow Lori's? Lori's cat might take it because a lot of cats will actually hunt lizards and eat them.
Yeah.
So. That's a great thing. That's a great thing because we don't get any hurt. What we get is that one of the things about lizard energy is it's about transference from one dimension to the next through manifestation of dreams. Okay, they call it the dream time. And so, the Aborigines in South America, in Australia, thank you, really hold lizard energy of any variety, and they have many there, of course, in high esteem, because those are the ones also that, in several of them, are the ones that they go lick to get high to go into the dream time, by the way. There you go. Kate, maybe you can instruct Krista on how to do proper lizard licking phrasing. And so, in any case, there is something going on in your house right now that looks like it's about to, that is trying to make an about turn. And all of you are focused on this lizard, and it's eluding you, right? It's eluding you. So, since your roommates are reasonably open to your spiritual guidance, and they are, because, they're essentially your little cabal, is have them sit down and all of you do a mastermind process and see what the message is. It feels actually, by the way, quite uplifting. It's just that you got to remember that for mammals, lizards, whether they're that big or like Tyrannosaurus Rex size, have always been back in the old reptilian brain terrifying, because they were the main predators of early mammals for 50 million years. So it's a natural instinct you have going here. But just so you know, giving you that information, then if you can rise above and even say, okay, I acknowledge, my basic animal wiring, but it is not a threat. And then see it. And then also, because what's interesting is in the middle of your mastermind, what's liable to happen is the thing will come out and it will actually kind of like approach the group.
Crawl up in our laps and say,
Now, if you did that, how you've been wanting to manifest some cash? If a lizard that talked crawled up in your lap and had a conversation with you, you would be set for life. You could take him on, and you could start your own internet channel if you want. Lizard Speaks.
We've all had really wicked, weird dreams the last last couple of nights. Uh-huh. All three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah.
Licking lizards is probably not going to do it. Okay. All right. Someone else can figure out.
Yeah.
I'll invite somebody over.
Yeah.
The other question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean there's another one.
Segue.
Okay.
I was reading something about the immunizations of the children. Now I think it's up to 28 by the time they turn 16. It used to be 5. Then it was 8. Now they've just impacted and compacted them. And I'm just curious about what Michael thinks of the reasons behind it, besides saying you're just not supposed to catch all these different diseases and such.
Well, on a simple note, of course, it's money. It's the pharmaceutical industry, you know, saying if, you know, by the way, let's create a new strain of something so that we can then, you know, create an antivirus to it and then, you know, have an immunization and go from there. It's interesting because if you follow the history of immunizations and inoculations throughout time, they're very useful. But what was true about them is that they were often given at single moments,
right.
Yeah. And in isolation, so that the body could process it completely before anything else was coming up. And then not to mention the fact that most people live closer to microbes, and they already had a lot of natural immunities anyway. Now, then you had the big five, you know, and we're talking about measles, rubella, smallpox, mumps and measles, or we said that, polio, you know, those big five, you know, they were, thank goodness for humanity that they really got, and you still have, you know, inoculations against them, because they were a major threat to literal, not just survival of, like, live and die, but also their gene mutators. So even those people who got the diseases, it would mutate their genes and cause mutations that, you know, like for instance, today's autism is not caused directly by the inoculations. Mm-hmm. It's caused by a number of mutations, primarily by heavy metal poisonings over the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing that happened is that there was, when they give these cocktails, now these cocktails have anywhere from 6 to 12 in one shot. And many of them are no longer synthesized off of live cultures. They are synthesized in labs, even including using petroleum-based products. So they take these kids at 3, 4, 5 years old, overwhelm their immune system, and trigger these recessive genes that get turned on. Now, it's great for souls who want to experiment with all these variations. Essences do dig weird stuff. You know, I mean, what you folks as human personalities, you know, consider painful or scary or hurtful, essences on the other side that live, you know, in eternity and evolve, you know, go, oh boy, let's dive into that body and try this. You know, John Merrick, you know, the king that wanted to be John Merrick, you all know the Elephant Man, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the human being that John Merrick was suffered enormously, mm-hmm. enormously. But the king essence in there was just so proud. I mean, he's now cycled off. But man, he's like a legend on the astral plane. You know, he comes up there and goes, man, did you see that body I took on? What a stud. You know? And not only that, I made all those wealthy people come and kiss my ass. You know, I mean, really, that was the kind of energy behind his reasoning. And he had an enormously successful life from the standpoint of his essence. But of course, as a human being, it was tremendous suffering. Now, the same thing is true then about these beings dropping in, because things like ADD, Asperger's, autism, like that, throw a completely new, they expand the ranges of the positive and negative poles of overleaves into dimensions and possible utilization of them in ways that have never been possible. Including, you know, then add on people who've taken on various kinds of, say, cybernetic implants, and or augmentations. Even people who are doing something what now you consider commonplace, like corneal transplants, where a person, you know, can essentially see again. You know, that in human history, and up until 50 years ago, that never happened. So these kind of things, I mean, imagine living part of, you know, your adult life completely blind and all of a sudden getting it back. What kind of, can you imagine any, just even a fleeting moment of how your perceptions would be just like whipsawed into, you know, a completely different way of experiencing. What a shock on one level, as well as what an amazement on another. Well, that's all new grist from the mill as far as essences are concerned. And those grist from the mill then, have, you know, of course, are wanted. But nonetheless, the ramifications on the physical plane, you know, are big time. Because if you mutate this species too much, what it's liable to do is it's liable to actually spin a new a cycle of evolution down here, in the same way that Cro-Magnon essentially helped end the Neanderthal reign. But by the way, all of you in here were on the planet as Neanderthals. That was the last complete racial cycle. Neanderthals were all, but the last Neanderthals were all seventh level old, and they were done. And some of you came over from your, you know, finishing that lifetime and jumped into the early Cro-Magnons to start your next cycle. But it was here on the same planet. And the same thing could happen again then, that you get this resurgence of essentially a new mutated form of humanness, much of which would probably be cybernetically augmented, that would then, you know, all of you that you would consider yourself, quote, normal humans, or just humans, as you would then be discriminated against and considered less than, and so on. So, you know, there's all sorts of interesting ramifications. And for the Tao, Tao's all happy with it. You guys, as being the Tao incarnate, that's what free will is about. You get to guide the Tao. It's not the Christian God. It's not the Islamic God that's sitting there going, well, this is what we're going to do. It's in the proportion of all of you that exist, how are you, you know, aggregating your free will to take it off in a certain, you know, projected direction. That's what's so interesting about, you know, the physical plane, and especially now that we've been, you know, commentating on it for the last 40 years, is y'all are the Tao in your bodies, and how y'all work together or not helps the track in which it is taken. So
my concern goes to the fact that it just seems to me there's a lot of these immunizations that basically are not necessary for people overall.
We wouldn't,
like,
yeah.
What is it going to do with people who really don't have a conscious thought about saying no, thank you, or that's all right, I'll pass. I have a friend who's a physician, and he says, I don't take that stuff. But I'm not taking the flu shot. I'm not going there, because there's poisons in all this stuff from the pharmaceutical end. A breakdown of whatever the internal system is. So that's my concern. I was told that I cannot help in the classroom anymore for my granddaughter's class.
Because you're not immunized.
Because I'm not immunized. And you have to get every single one of the flu shots that come out now.
Right.
And all this stuff. You have to get every time one comes up. So they want you to have them all. It's a personal thing for me. Other people, I don't know. I'm just curious. I just wonder about little kids in particular getting all the shots right down the line. They don't have a choice anymore.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's mutation. It's the groundwork for, you know, different mutations, mm-hmm. for sure. And it's when we talked about the pharmaceutical, I mean, look at the larger, more ubiquitous metaphysical term. It's about power. Mm-hmm. You know, where are your concentrations of power? And then those who, you know, who don't have the institutional concentrations of power, how do you manifest your power? Do you band together? Do you make your voice known? Do you do things to then change the institutions? Institutions is where you see, you've heard us all say that the young soul, the mature soul thing, right? What we're talking about essentially is what is the structure of your institutions show you the dominant soul ages in aggregate. Okay, mm-hmm. I mean, many of you would be surprised to know the 12% of old souls on the planet, if you do the numbers, you know, you're talking still almost, what is that? That's almost 800 million people. So there's a lot of old souls on the planet. There's still 30. Is that Bodhi? It is Bodhi. My goodness. Oh my goodness.
Hi, honey.
Well, good to see ya.
The traffic was terrible.
So I've heard from several. Wow. Okay. Wow. We just have a bunch of you visiting tonight. Whoa. Okay. Well, anyhow. So yeah, the mutation and where it's going to go, you know, it will be remain to be seen. There are so many undefined. Vectors right now. I mean, if one were to be, let's just call it New Age positive, and stand the furthest degree back, you could say this is a time period where the most possible creation or you know, new invention has happened since the founding of the United States. As far as, you know, a major tilting event. Because, you know, many of the old and mature souls who actually invented the Constitution set the world on largely, you know, if you didn't live in a culture like this, you actually couldn't do your spiritual explorations. Mm-hmm. You couldn't become wealthy. You couldn't span out and go get education in just about whatever field you wanted. And, but just not this culture, the ones that modeled, like Australia, right? It modeled a great deal to Australia and even back to England. And then through the Western world. So this kind of mature soul, intellectual, but also social awareness and freedom came out of that experiment. So this blank slate right now, you know, in its most, again, positively stated things is wide open. You know, and where it goes from here will be, you know, collective creation. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yes, Michael.
We've talked quite a bit about things like technology and social experiments. What about the impact of this divergence and where things are going in terms of consciousness experiments? If, for example, what is the potential collectively for an expansion of consciousness that goes, you know, beyond this physical piece of reality, that, you know, this parallel? Are we experimenting with that collectively in any way?
Individuals, more than, say, institutions, are looking for different avenues of, you know, the first round of this really happened big time, again, in the 80s. That's when everybody was turned on to the idea, and in fact, there was a lot of vibrational openness for, you know, a lot of teachers like ourselves to just kind of like plop right in, and people to do large scale attempts at holding space, holding energy, doing mass consciousness sort of raisings. But of course, you know, for those of you who are historians in the occult, you know that a lot of this really started back in the early 1800s anyway. And then, you know, through Madame Blavatsky and, you know, Annie Besant, the Theosophical movement, you know, Rudolf Steiner and so forth, you know, they really, you know, were the and then Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, of course, our first contacts, you know, through, you know, down here. So right now, the experimentation that is going on in more individuals was like one you experienced. The folks who are being brought out of the jungles in South America, but also in Africa, they have a similar kind of essentially shamanic root that is drawing people to do, you know, expanded consciousness. Now, what's very interesting in the mainstream, and some of you have read about this, is the re-alerting to the fact that psilocybin is being, you know, considered as being a therapeutic, assist. And that there have been, you know, some major positive experiences with, you know, much more measured and precise doses and guided experiences through in clinical settings where people have, you know, come out of depression, you know, have arrested symptoms of PTSD. PTSD, right? And also they're talking about it, looking at it to see if they can explore the edges of working with schizophrenia. In other words, essentially what we call subpersonalities, schizophrenia is just subpersonalities gone on war to each other. You know, where these parts so diversify that they don't even recognize that they're still part of a whole. There's a movie out now with the actor...
The Population.
What's it called?
Our Population.
Yeah, well, yeah, right. Well, the population, yeah. Well, some of the wiring of the brain that we talked about earlier, Kathy, lends to that, of course. But in any case, when we were just mentioning that James McAvoy film, you know, about showing about a multiple personality, you know, there's an example of someone, you know, as you find out in the film, had been exposed also to a lot of drugs that essentially helped blow him apart, not, you know, help him cope with getting them together. Anyway, really what more people are using more than, say, drugs, of whether they're natural or is they're trying to use electrical stimulation, virtual reality. Even the resurgence of, what is it called now, electroconvulsive therapy, I believe, ECT, instead of what you used to call shock therapy, as to try and, you know, wake up the brain. You know, the brain is not exactly the seat of consciousness, but it is the transceiver of the mind. In other words, it's the, you know, it's the wetware that actually conducts the electrical field that then opens, you know, to receiving, you know, other dimensional inputs, as well as the invention of ideas. You know, not all ideas that have ever come through in the history of humankind have been downloaded from on high. They've come anew through imagination, which is one of the cool things that Tao loves. So one of the really cool things is, as virtual reality increases, you're going to see people, well, it's already happening, really. Actually, when, whatever, 20 years ago, when the idea of a chat room or, you know, or billboard, or I guess, bullet before that, and now, of course, you have social media. Well, as the technology increases, then you have multi-user, what do they call those, multi-user games, where you create little things. They'll eventually get out of the entertainment a realm and the escapism realm that they are basically nested in now, and you'll experience people meeting there for much more important and much more significant you know, creative sessions. And now that you've got 3D printers going on, imagine that you get enough people who have access to enough resources who get together, do essentially a mind meld vis-a-vis virtual reality, and then have these things hooked up to large-scale printers. And we're talking about large-scale, like meaning, say, the small airplane hangar, where, you know, their collective input and speed of thought transfer of information and ideas can formulate these things. And, of course, a computer with the even the computing power that's there now can capture it, put it into algorithmic form, and print it out. That kind of thing is important because while it may not... some of them will expand people's awareness that you're not bound anymore by just, like, what tools you got. You got some wood or enough cement or any of that sort of thing, where they will have the experience of instant manifestation. And that'll open the door into deeper consciousness, like, well, what part of me is creating? And when they get into that, then that leads a whole vista, you know, a whole new avenue of explorations where people could go to, you know, to not just have expanded consciousness, but turn it within and focus on self-awareness. who is the I in here? Or is there no I, as the Buddhists say, and there's just existence? And whatever I am, or whatever it is just working through this thing called me. Well, wow, isn't that kind of cool? Let's go further. Let's go deeper. And then in which case, remember that rewiring of the brain we said? People will just get bored with the other stuff. You know, the cell phones won't make a biggest deal. They won't, you know, be as distracting and so on and so forth.
So, so speaking of that, let me ask my Michael Entity, the classic non-dual question, who am I? How would Michael Entity answer that for themselves?
You mean how would we say that? Well, we are now Michael's consortium, ourselves, and so in the non-dual...
What does that mean to you? Who am I?
Well, you have to understand, even though how we experience ourselves is that we are in constant interplay of energy. And to the degree to which there is, it's Schrodinger's milestone statement, because it's the closest thing that we can come about being able to see when something is a particle and a wave. And the only way you can have a particle form is when you actually observe it and you seek to observe it. And then, so when you talk to us, if you will, when you ask us question, we become a particle. We, if you will, congeal emotion of the totality of the Tao in its multidimensionality. We assume a position, so to speak. And from there, utilize these otherwise three-dimensional, meat housings with the verbal apparatus to transmit these thought forms that still require audio projection instead of just telepathic ones. So how we perceive ourselves at any given moment is just that, at any given moment.
Interesting.
You're suggesting that we're moving towards more telepathic communication.
Yes, it's inevitable.
It's
inevitable. Some of the rewiring that you all have right now, as we're talking about, the speed at which you see data and that you quickly... process it and sort it and so forth. You're reading visual cues. And much of what the first layer of telepathic communication is reading visual cues. So that when you take a pass at someone, the just slight angle of how their mouth may be turned up or down, or how much their eyes are open or if they're closed, or the number of lines across the forehead, that kind of thing, or even the angle of where a person is tilting their head, indicating that they're accessing a certain like, for instance, up here in this range is when a person is actually accessing higher intellectual center. When a person is essentially down here and tucked in with their eyes closed, like in deep meditation, you're going into higher moving. Accessing, just say a straight emotional centering is usually where a person's kind of going from side to side, seeing how they feel about it. Now, this may not be even that exaggerated as we're just doing. It might just be ever so slight, and even just movement of their eyes, but they're accessing emotionally. Because they're tilting their brain apparatus like an antenna to receive on that wavelength.
So,
that's...
Yes? Would you consider that telepathy, or would you consider that just really good observation?
Well, that's just it. One will lead to the other, dear. It's in the wiring of the brain, Bodhi, it'll bring up... it'll eventually evolve toward that state. You're right. Right now, it is just good observation. But there are many people who don't even have that level of attention that they focus for a period of time enough to have powers of observation.
Right.
The idea of that they look but they don't see, that
sure.
Kind of notion. Well.
So how do I support the young people to start moving into that? Because as an aged person, my brain's pretty, it's malleable, but not that much.
Right, right. Plasticity is declining.
Yeah. But the kids that I work with, they're young, they have these minds that could accept that as a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Telepathically,
yeah.
Yeah, they could consider that as a reality in their future. Are there sort of resources for moving them towards that?
Believe it or not, what we might say to you might surprise you. You want to teach people to be telepathic? Is make sure they become extremely proficient in language.
Mm-hmm.
Because every language is a verbal expression of a nuance. And the more that they can be alerted to nuance, then the more that they can decipher precisely the cues. Telepathy isn't going to be so much the kind of way that they, you know, show in the movies, where all of a sudden the guy's in there, you know, and he's hearing a person's thoughts, you know, verbatim. There will be holographic reception of the imagery and even the descriptors, the potential descriptors of what that imagery means to that person. But unless a person has the auditory training in their own mind to be able to pull that out of the database to label those things, it won't make sense of it anyway. A lot of people have that already. You know, you pass somebody and you kind of just notice, and all of a sudden something jumps into your head, and you go, "What the hell was that about?" And what you do is you got an unframed, telepathic snapshot from an individual without any context. And of course, you know, and because this particular point in history is so fixated, not so much just on privacy, even though that's part of it, it's the idea of don't get involved. And so when people have these things come so many times, they know that there's so many social strictures out there that say, if you say anything, well, first thing we're going to do is we're going to call you crazy. Then the next thing we're going to say, we're going to shame you. Then the next thing after that, you know, we're going to, maybe we'll even intimidate you and say, well, you need some help. Come on. So there's a whole number of things that prevent people from talking about this, unless, you know, you're talking about with your intimates, who you might feel safe, but then still may not, depending upon what the range of their acceptability of this is. So, And then with these small and fragmented, of course, it keeps people from sharing on a large scale. You know what organization was really, really good about this? Was ARE. Are you guys familiar with them?
Yeah.
Edgar Casey's group? You know, it has lost a great deal of popularity and a great deal of patronage, but they were superior at really working to create these kind of mutual mental malls. You know why we came up with that phrase, maybe it's the alliteration, but anyway, literally it was just that, where they would literally create safe environments with instructive and situational supports that would help allow for these kinds of conversations. There was other groups, not to say that they were the only one, but they were definitely on a large scale. Probably after that, in the modern era, Robert Monroe and his institute in, North Carolina?
Virginia.
Virginia, thank you.
Both in Virginia,
you know, so, anyway. So, did that answer your question, Brody? Or at least somewhat?
Essentially, yeah, it opens the door to a whole lot more, but I'll work on that.
There's one other thing that we would say is another way to help kids is to give them an expansion of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for instance, one of the exercises that we want to continue to expand upon would be to have a group of children role play the planets in the solar system. And so you pick a central sun, a person to represent the central sun, and then you do the proportional measurements.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Mercury is going to stand about maybe a foot away from the sun. And then Venus is going to stand about 5 yards away. And then Earth is going to be about, about 10 yards. And then, and so forth. And you have people literally get in those orientations.
Mm-hmm.
Then by the time you get to Pluto, you're realizing, you're about 2 football fields away.
No, it's actually more than
2.5 miles 2.5 miles away, thank you. Okay, so the reason that's important is because it actually gives them a concrete experience of proportionality and distance. And and when they have that expanse of distance, a real physical relational sensation of it, they get to say, wow, it's big out there. And if they can really get it's big out there, then guess what? Their imagination expands that big to fill it. And then they have a workspace that literally is not constrained by the, you know, especially in the modern era, you know, you have buildings on every corner. Even in the mountains, then you have, you know, thickets of forest, so you have a tree, another tree that's just five feet away. You know, none of this is wrong, of course, but it just limits perspective. You know, the only other thing is, you know, is if you take kids out, say, to deserts, or get them on the ocean and put them out in the lifeboats, just string them out. Well, seriously, given that sense of perspective. Now, in some of the kids will be scared shitless, but it will scare them because it will go beyond their instinctive centers. Their instinctive centers will be blown, and blown. They're not going to die. They're not going to go crazy. But what it will do is it will take the pre-programmed automatic limits that are in there, and it will physically extend them. And so they'll rewire, you know, they'll get over their shock, they'll have whatever. A lot of the kids will go, whoa, dude! So they'll have a ball. Some of them will be like, weird. Walk them through their PTSD, but they'll still, really, they'll have some of that too.
Sure.
But the thing is, the way that, unfortunately, it's not PTSD that's the problem, it's the way we handle it. You can heal anybody's trauma by being with them, holding space, loving them, and telling them they're not crazy for having it. You live in a culture now that still makes people crazy for, oh, you mean you were sitting there watching people die on both sides and your best friend had his head blown off his shoulder and then tomorrow let's go out for beer. That's the insane part. But that's being projected as normality still. Even though there's, you know, there's at least greater and greater acceptance of what that is. And then, of course, finally, fortunately, it's also coming down into battered wives and abused children, you know, and also the, you know, the social terror that the poor and minorities suffer. In other words, it's beginning to realize that, you know, trauma doesn't have to be something that was once glorified. It's just when one human being acts like a terrific asshole and mean to another. That's trauma-inducing. Mm-hmm. And the more that eventually trickles through, and it'll be slow, and then people bond together to say, oh, we can heal this, then the lessons from it will be learned, inculcated, and there can be huge movements forward, including movements to say, this war stuff, not a good idea. You know, this this inequality that, you know, that makes, you know, uneducated women and children vulnerable to, you know, vulnerable to spouses who are also terrified, by the way, who their only sense of power is to visit it on their local, less powerful than they are, you know, meaning wife and child. Once those things start getting handled, then it starts to go away. And then these consciousness experiments, by the way, become something that curiosity rather than terror becomes the motivating force. So.
Wasn't there a movie, I think it was Firefox, that Clint Eastwood was the...
Yeah, pilot. Yeah, so yeah. Yeah.
Only if you thought in Russian.
Right. He had a cognitive control where he was, it was essentially a cybernetic interface, right?
Yeah, right.
And, but he was still verbalizing in his brain, and yes, you're right, because all the things were programmed in the Russian language.
Yes.
To respond, he had to think in Russian, yes.
He was in a dogfight, and while he was thinking English, he was losing.
Right.
He had to remember to think in Russian,
right,
to get it back together again. That was pretty cool. Silver Mind Control, I think, wasn't that pretty active when the ARE stuff was active?
Yeah, I mean, they had, you know, and Silva was, you know, really trying to pull more of the educational side because they knew if they went too far, they'd be just ostracized out of credibility. So, you know, they became more Silva tutorial and educational support, you know, so for expanding one's ability to hold attention and that sort of thing, yeah. So that was, but the mind control stuff lasted, if you were to look back in the literature, it lasted only a little while. It had maybe a 10-year window, and then again they went into, you know, emphasized the educational side. And sleep disorders and things, you know, where you could, you know, do behavioral modification with your mind and that sort of thing. Kathy?
Well, there are three things I'm interested in, and I'd like you to pick one.
Oh, okay.
One is the comment that you made about repopulating the earth with a single species of tree.
Yeah.
And what that brought up for me was recently reading about the Cavendish banana and how it's about to go extinct.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you could talk about that. A second thing that you might talk about is I'm really interested in this alt-government movement, this form of resistance within the government by government employees, whether there's any potential for effectiveness there. And the third thing I've already forgotten, so just pick me up.
Your whole question got answered. Well, let's take on the biodiversity issue first.
Okay.
Actually, we can do the second one and say, yeah, it's effective. Because as long as you've got enough people trading enough information and sounding off, it'll be effective. That's almost literally all it needs.
I'm concerned they're going to be tracked down and fired.
That is definitely one of the consequences that can and will happen. But it won't be complete system-wide.
Okay.
There will be rejection, rebellion. And, I mean, that is to say, even court rebellion in that one.
Okay.
Where they will put a stop to that.
Okay.
So, biodiversity. It, unfortunately, is going to be continuing the massive decline. As our resident scientists can tell you, we're in the midst of the sixth extinction event, and it's not going to stop anytime soon. It is entirely man-created, human-created, because of all the imbalances created. And of course, one of the things that will at least curb it, to the cost of reduction of lots of different species, will be the biotech industry, because there's a lot of money there, and they're actually pretty effective. You know, splicing together genes in the right combination, you know, you can make a banana that could double as a baseball bat, and taste like it's dipped in chocolate all at the same time. Not to mention the size of a baseball bat. I mean, you know, so it's entirely plausible that they'll do that. But of course, it runs the risk. Now, what's interesting, and this kind of harkens back to Michael's question about some of the consciousness movements, there are massive, massive volunteer efforts at seed collection multiples of groups all over the planet, and including some independents, and some even have like, ooh, hello. Oh, that's your spirit guide now, Russ. Just so you know. And your spirit guide says, hey, man, stand up and crash.
Lean on me.
Yeah, lean on you, yeah. Yeah, if you start hearing, you know, that pretty thing. Anyway, so as far as gas, because that's really the big single issue, is gases regulation in the atmosphere. Carbon fixing and continuing to suppress methane release. Those are the two biggies. So on land, trees, rapid growing trees are the best defense against that. There are some technologies. They even have them in China now. These massive, essentially they're reverse smokestacks. They're literally like eight to 10 story high, 30, 40 foot across circular things that are basically big wind sucks that pull carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide out of the air and filter out the particulates. You all probably remember pictures of seeing what Beijing looked like during the Olympics. They're figuring it out, and it can be done. The question is climate heating. I don't bend that now. Thank you. Yeah. By the way, folks, in case you have your cards, you can just set them down. Play with your thumbs, not with my cards, if you would. You know, unless you're gonna buy a set, in which case I'll sacrifice. Anyway, thank you for letting me pop in there with a commercial interruption. There will be a good deal of that. What also will be interesting is to see how governments or even local independent groups will continue to introduce outside species in local areas that are temporary mitigators, of problems. It creates others. You know, whenever you introduce a foreign species into a non-familiar environment, it can run rampant and so on. So, we actually don't see a problem with food. The problem would be is too many people, unfair distribution, and the reduction of the number of natural sources of food that haven't been tampered with in some way. For diversity purposes, that is.
Yeah, I was thinking more of, the planet dying.
The planet won't die in your lifetime. That's one thing we're telling everyone is, and that doesn't let you off the hook.
Right.
That just means you're going to have one big karmic wallop when you get to the other side. Because even though many of you individually have done your best to try and participate and take care of the planet and so forth, as a collective, this slice of you all were, all of you participated in the monetary system. All of you are consumers. All of you, so you have participated to a degree in the both the institutions and the processes that have helped to lead to this. So you may not be, Mitch McConnell, next lifetime, he's going to be a slave in the mines in South Africa. And it's he in for a rude awakening.
Couldn't happen to a nicer fellow.
No, it really couldn't. He's a server who's just really off the charts bizarre. And so anyway, like him, they're going to be monstrous next lives. Monstrous, and basically suffering, So though we don't wish that on them, but they are building it for themselves, mm-hmm. because all these are choices at this juncture, All of these things that they're doing, they may not be spiritually aware, but they are cognitively knowledgeable enough to know the implications. And what they're cognitively knowledgeable enough is that the Koch brothers have told virtually every Republican in office to do lockstep, and they're doing it.
Yeah.
So that's a karmic issue in themselves.
What about my great grandchildren that are alive right now? What do they have to look forward to?
They have the opportunity of seeing new industries created, trying to rehabilitate the oceans. They have the opportunity to see. Because robots won't be able to do so much in the water as they will be doing on land, replacing like manufacture. New industries like dump mining, where people will have industries that go into these massive landfills and go through there and pull out. I mean, in many landfills in most areas of say high to medium wealth, there's at least probably 4 to 5 tons of silver and maybe a ton of gold in all the different appliances and everything. And then not to mention all the precious stones that have been washed down sinks or accidentally thrown out. Then all the rare earths that go into, in the micro quantities, but that are in all these new appliances. The chromium, the rubidium, you name these things that, again, they just take small. Well, they will be exposed to that. Now, unfortunately, also, they will be exposed to more carbon-dense atmospheres, less oxygen in the atmosphere. So what they'll also almost all certainly be is there will be a tendency for most kids when they're born to be augmented with some kind of oxygen filtration system built into their bodies. And it will be, put it this way, folks, it'll be as commonplace these days as you all think of, going to get inoculation, because, you know, most of the Western world is completely conditioned to that, going to get your driver's license or something of that nature. But the only difference is it'll happen right after, you know, you come out of the womb.
Circumcision only different.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What about the use of bioengineering, so for example, to create microorganisms that can, you know, consume or reverse synthetics? Waste?
Believe it or not, they've already got some of those.
Yeah.
It's not in the interest of those who have wealth and power yet. Mm-hmm. And until it becomes their interest, they'll continue to exploit in the direction that they have all their investments in. And because they have the power structures, you know, pretty much bought and paid for, and the only way that's going to happen is by, you know, people, you know, doing the revolution. And the question will be, of course, how violent will the revolution be or not? But at this juncture, human beings have still decided to remain on the violence tool course.
In that regard, Michael, the subject that I, the third subject.
Oh, you were called.
Yeah, education. One of the most interesting articles that I read post-election was from a former white supremacist who wrote about the power of the Christian homeschooling movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just like you to talk about education in general and what you foresee there.
Knowledge will increase to accumulate, continue to accumulate its distribution for at least the next 20 years will continue to decline. In other words, there's a concentration of you know, making people more and more stupid by either withholding information and knowledge, you know, in other words, proven information, feeding them the false information, you know, like this fellow down in, where is he, in Tennessee, who rebuilt the Ark and shows a caveman riding a dinosaur, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that promotion of that sort of distortion, at least in this country, is going to increase. The good news is that in most European and Asian countries, it's going to increase.
Sure.
Because they understand, the decline of intellect is what also destroys, you know, your society. Mm-hmm. So we just took it from this country's going. Yeah. So that's okay. Going to continue to happen. Mm-hmm. Now the interesting thing about it is, of course, is that. It will put, you know, this period of time has, you know, and when we talked about the slate being cleaned and so forth, it does allow for, one doesn't have to rely just on Christian homeschools.
I didn't mean that.
Yeah. But so, I mean, there will be an upshot of people generally of means who will create their own little, you know, groups where their children are hypercharged or sent out of the country.
Can I piggyback on that? In that, a friend of mine and I were discussing the fact that all this lowering of education and strangling schools for money, from public funds, kind of started in the late 60s, early 70s by the right wing, who saw what was going on with the baby boomers. The fact that, you know, we were rioting and we questioned authority and, you know, we weren't going to settle down and knuckle under and, you know, we had a lot of idealism. And it seems to me that this group of people decided that never again will we ever have a mass educated society. And that's when, to me anyway, the, you know, the schooling started to become separated, because from their standpoint, only the wealthy elite should be educated, and the rest of us should be just educated enough to, you know, run the machine.
Do the task.
But not question anything, and certainly not be the way we are. And it seems like, from where I stand, at least to here in the United States, that's what's happened.
What you're suggesting, Angela, is it didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
It has been
right.
A trend and waves and so forth.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
we thoroughly agree.
And it was completely deliberate.
Oh, yeah. Yes, agreed. Complete undermining. So, last question, Edie. Oh, okay. Last question to Edie, or second to last question,
okay.
Edie, and then you, Bodie, okay? Promise. She had her hand up twice.
Mine isn't a question. I have information about what she just
said. Oh, well, then you folks could. Oh, okay. How about if you comment after I answer Edie's question?
Perfect.
Thank you. All right. So, we know how we sages are. So, go ahead.
So, in Germany, as Hitler was taking power, there were a lot of people who were told to leave, and they didn't, because they really didn't believe that something as horrible as was perpetrated would ever be there.
Right.
So are there any parallels to now?
You ask one of those great self-answering questions. Several. The first thing is that there is a, while it is, it, back then it was actually much kind of more, there were less factors to cover over people's perceptions. It should have been obvious, but since the level of horrificness hadn't ever been seen in Europe before, people couldn't imagine it. Again, they couldn't expand their minds to a level that looked down and say, oh my God, how many people could be just horrible? In the modern era, the major parallel that is starting off is the whole business about alt and fake news, particularly to turn people into enemies against one another.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are the biggest scapegoats are the blacks. They are the ones just taking the and then turning perpetrators into victims, like the police.
Mm-hmm.
The meme that goes around that people are hunting police is getting bought hook, line, and sinker by a great deal of what you might call the conservative American backbone of the country. And then, so they go out and buy their own guns because they think, oh God, after the police, well, the numbers absolutely don't support it. And because we've turned blacks, minorities in general, into the enemy, anything that they do, of course, is because they're in fear of their lives, even though they're carrying out mayhem. That is a direct parallel to what happened with Hitler's brown shirts and the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Turning the Jews into the perpetrators, even though they were unarmed, and minding their own business.
Right.
And then the brown shirts, the jackboots, come in and, beat them up. And then eventually, of course, when...
Right.
Takeover in 39 happened. Go on.
Right. So part of the question is, like you were talking earlier, about being here and being participating in the transformation that we hope will happen in this country, as opposed to moving out. In other words, when does it become unsafe to be? Is that an individual determination, or is that, in other words, or do we just stay and participate?
Well, in part it's an individual determination.
Okay.
I mean, it's an individual,
yeah,
both morally, politically, and economically for you. One has to have the means to go live in another country these days.
Right.
Back in the 30s, they could still, get on a train and a boat relatively inexpensively and then, go to a country that still had lots of openings, even if they weren't professionals. But now, you look at the world and the refugee situation all over the place. Not to mention even people who have legal status in this country who are... non-white, because that's really calling a spade, so to speak, no pun intended, are vulnerable to getting just not only exported or deported, excuse me, but rather, you know, getting brutalized in the process. Well, so people coming in isn't, you know, let alone you or anybody else going out as expatriates unless you've got the means to do so.
Right.
Now, on a spiritual level, if you, for kind of framing this question on that level,
right.
The irony is that, you know, as we said, the collective of human consciousness has once again decided that the evolutionary turn is going to use violence as its mechanism. You know, for a while, all you were preaching peace, love, you know, and all that, and it was working. And as Angela was saying about the mindset growing fear, you know, that you know, we have to have, you know, the Lord in our guns and all that sort of thing because of the fear of change. Well, what it will take for older souls, mature and old souls, is to get equally as militant at this juncture. But from the mindset, from the same mindset that the United States went to war with in against Hitler.
Right.
There was a natural sense of actually, you know, doing something that was just and acting in a way that was relatively consistent with that. And then after it was done, being forgiving and rebuilding. Now, that kind of mindset, instead of internationally, would have to be brought up domestically. In other words, liberals, you know, in the same way that, you know, your average conservative will cuss, make, you know, wave their gun and that kind of thing, and is having to turn and say, oh, no, you don't. And that's tough for you guys, because you went through all that.
Yeah.
You know?
And what I personally see is a lot of not only old souls, but old people really cycling off.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's true. You mean people dying to kind of like
at
the hopelessness.
Like,
there's been a huge wave of hopelessness in the world since the great, you know, recession, as they called it, because so many people, the illusions collapsed. And at the turn of the century, when you had, you know, the setup called 9/11, it began this downward collapse of people's, you know, belief in ideals and hope and that sort of thing. And you're right, a lot of people have maybe been forestalling that, but the eventual weight of all of that hopelessness begins to build up and people do leave under it. That's true.
I think especially people who had a tremendous amount of hope with this love and peace was going to really transform the planet.
Yes.
And it's like, well, it's transformed, but not the way we thought it would.
Yeah. Well, it actually has done a lot of positive transformation, but in that it also brewed its own backlash.
Okay.
And the backlash, you know, got big enough and heavy enough and skilled enough at manipulation and intimidation on a mass scale, and people got tired and then succumbed. So, Bodhi, why don't you finish up, and then we're going to call it a night.
I just wanted to let you know that when the industrials created public education, they did so with the intent to only educate the children of their workers slightly more than their parents to be effective workers,
mm-hmm.
that with no intention of having those people be artisans, inventors. They had those within their own class.
Right, yeah.
And that's what I read. Create an
ongoing service class.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. A subordination of just workers.
That was the intention, as it still sits there.
Yeah. So. Well, on that happy note, thanks everyone for coming. And oh, they've disappeared.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I wonder what's going to happen next.
What will it be?
What will it be?
I think we should mingle and wait. And see.
Yes, everyone, mingle. Enjoy yourselves. Thanks for coming.